This is a session called Alternative Celebrations, and I get real excited about this topic. So today, my goals for this session are to help us talk about together about alternative celebrations, but first of all, to define what that means for me, and maybe you folks have some refinements to the definition can help me with that. And then I'd like to have us start determining what an alternative celebration or celebration is for us as individuals, and then to start brainstorming some ideas about what are alternative celebrations. And of course, we'll do some talking about why the heck would we want to do an alternative celebration. So, as I said, I get real excited about this. I think I started thinking about this sort of thing when I was a very young person. The last year or so, I've been doing a number of sessions at churches, church forums mainly, on alternative Christmas celebrations. And started putting together my thoughts about this and realized I've really dealt with this since I was a young girl. I'm the youngest of four children. I grew up on a farm, as you're probably picking up. And I'm quite a bit younger than my siblings, and so I always felt some sort of responsibility for the celebration in our family. I was kind of like an only child for a while. And still kind of am the one that come up with the crazy ideas for things to do for our family and that sort of thing. So that's where that comes from. My parents also, and I appreciate them for this, provided with me with an understanding of simplicity of lifestyle and celebration of lifestyle. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from with this. To start out with, I want to warn you that most of my kind of public work in this area has been around the area of Christmas and Advent, and I'm stretching that to include the olive celebration for us, but a lot of my examples will kind of be Christmas focused. But I think it's important for us to be thinking about how we're going to celebrate Advent and Christmas well ahead of time before we get kind of pulled into what the normal structure is. So I'm going to read a story that comes from a book that I recommend to you called To Celebrate, Reshaping Holidays and Rites of Passage. It's in the bookstore. It's an excellent resource. Wonderful background, and it takes you through the entire year of different sorts of celebrations that you might like to celebrate. Whose birthday is it, anyway? In the land of puzzling tales, there lived an 8-year-old boy by the name of Jason. Now in this land and in the neighborhood where Jason lived, the unexpected always happened. Instead of football, they played knee-ball. Instead of the children going to school, the teachers were busy going to homes. In the summertime, it was not uncommon to see water freeze, and in the wintertime, leaves grew on the trees. It was a funny, strange place. One incident in the land of puzzling tales stands out. When it was time for Jason's 9th birthday, as usual, the unusual happened. Jason's grandparents came from their home across the state to help celebrate. But of course, when they got to Jason's neighborhood, they went immediately to the Browns down the street and visited and stayed there. When Jason's mother baked the birthday cake, she gave it to the letter carrier to eat. And when all the neighborhood kids heard it was Jason's birthday, they exchanged gifts with one another, and of course, Jason got none. There was a blizzard of birthday cards. The post office had to hire extra workers and work longer hours to handle the deluge of cards. Of course, in the land of puzzling tales, the expected was the unexpected, and all the kids, the moms and dads, grandparents, even the dogs and a parakeet, got cards, while poor Jason got none. Finally, about 9 o'clock, in a fit of frustration and anger, Jason went out of his house, borrowed the school cheerleader's megaphone, rode up and down the street on his unicycle, and shouted at the top of his lungs, "Whose birthday is it, anyways?" And the night was so silent that all night long, echoes bounced off the mountainsides. "Whose birthday is it, anyway? Whose birthday is it, anyway?" I commend that to you in the context of Christmas, and you start thinking about the holiday season and whose birthday is it anyways? Who are you sending cards to? Who are you celebrating? I think it's important for us to do some, to regain some perspective on celebrating in our lives. And you didn't know that this was going to be a values clarification session, but that's what it is all about. Celebrating is about who we are. It's about nurturing one another. It's about who we are now, who we've been, and what we want to be, and where we want to go. And if we don't know who we are, or where we've been, or where we want to be, we're probably going to get wrapped up into some celebrations and some lifestyle that isn't representative of who we are. I think of a celebration as kind of a mini drama. Dan Erlander uses the image of the hourglass in the context of worship as a celebration and as a representation of our life. It's a mini drama that all the grains of sand that are our usual life come together in this moment of intensity, of representation of what our life is all about. And then it goes on again into the fullness of our life and the busyness of our life. But there's that mini drama, celebration, worship as celebration is a mini drama. And any celebration we do, whether it be a birthday celebration or the celebration of Valentine's Day or St. Patrick's Day or Easter or Christmas or whatever, is a mini drama of our lives coming together at an intensified moment. It's a time to nourish our spirits, to celebrate, to be happy, to forget about the things that are daily in our lives, and to remember those things that are really true and abiding for us. One phrase that I've read in this To Celebrate book is calls celebration as ritualized interruption. And that helps to give us focus and meaning in our lives. A ritualized interruption in our lives. It's a time to just lay the daily routine aside and have a blowout or have a little time of celebration together. Obviously, you're getting the sense that I feel that celebration is more than entertainment. It is that, but it is rooted more in who we are as people. One of the other things about celebration is it helps us anticipate the future, what we want it to be like, and to think about it. I think many of us in this room are single, since it's singles emphasis. Well, maybe not, maybe half here. We're a good integrated group here. I think some of us have some trouble with celebration in our families because we're single. Maybe some of us who are married have troubles with celebrations. Maybe, I know I talked to a lot of friends of mine and family members of mine who are married, you know, bringing together celebrations from two families is not all that easy either. Heard story upon story about how do you deal with Christmas when you first get married and maybe even later than that. Biblically, there's a basis for celebration, and I don't know how many folks here have had the chance to be at Barbara Rossing's Bible studies this week, but she certainly has pointed out to us the need for feasting and celebrating and eating together, sharing time together, fellowship together, that is really a biblical based biblically. In fact, the passages that I looked up and that was referred to in some of the reading I've done were exactly the passages that Barb has been using this week. So I thought, well, I guess we've meshed something here, and we didn't even know that we were going to do that. So therefore, celebrations are a time to forget and to remember both. It's a time to forget the daily and to remember what it is that really is true for us. And I think that's part of the reason why it's hard for a lot of people. Celebrations in families especially can be difficult for a lot of people because you may be remembering something that doesn't really stand for who you are or I am. And that's where the kind of rub is for many of us. For me, the context of that is the consumer aspect of many of our celebrations and the commercialization, especially of Christmas. That is a real rub for me because it doesn't feel like it fits with what I believe a celebration of that holiday is all about or what I want it to be for me and for my family. So it seems, well, I could change it, right? Well, that's not that easy. We all know that. There's traditions that are long-standing in families and in our culture. One of the things that I think is really sad is that I read about a entrepreneur, some probably Madison Avenue type person, said that Christmas is the most wonderful thing because it shows what a wealthy nation we are. That's really what Christmas does for the world. And it's like, wait a minute, that's not what Christmas is about in my mind. And then I look at some of the behavior that I exhibit, that my family exhibits, and I think, boy, that is the value that many people I know, and I often do as well. I feel pressured into having to have expensive gifts or a gift for everyone, or, you know, just a very special gift that, you know, that I spend a lot of time shopping for. I have a real problem with the shop till you drop kind of mentality. That's kind of where I come from. I'm not wanting to say that there aren't lots of benefits from being a part of a consumer-oriented culture. There are lots of benefits that we all reap, that I reap. And I'm just saying that I'm not always comfortable with all of those. Unfortunately, most of the discretionary money people have in our culture is spent towards Christmas. Gifts and entertaining and that sort of thing. I think it's unfortunate. Maybe you think differently. I'm showing you my values here. And the poor people, at the expense of the poor and the environment. Excuse me. Poor people probably think Christmas is a real hoax, because being in a culture that says that if you're good, you get lots of gifts, and if you're bad, you get coal and broom switches and those sorts of things. So the poor people must then figure, well, I must be bad, or I'm not a good part of the culture or the society. So many people kind of do this comparison of Santology and Christology, Santology. And that's a hard thing to deal with, because there's some good aspects of Santa as well. I want to have you do some thinking. I have some scratch paper here and some pencils. If you need that, or if you have your own little notebook or whatever, help yourself to that. I want you to do a thinking about celebration in your life, what it means to you. And we're going to use Christmas as the example, because it is the most blatant kind of example in our lives of celebrations. At least it is in my life. And I would suppose in yours, since we all are part of a similar culture. I have a little exam up here I want you to take. It'll take you just a few minutes. I've written some catchphrases up there. I'm going to read some things to you. I've written the catchphrases so that you can have a visual reminder of what I've said. I want you to write on that piece of paper the numbers 1 to 10. Does anybody else need something hard to write on? Maybe Marjorie can bring you something. Anybody else want one? Here you go. Allison likes something, Marjorie. Yeah, once you've written 1 to 10 on your sheet, I'm going to have you rank in order, 1 being the highest and 10 being the lowest. What is it that you value the most? What is it that you think is the most important to you of these aspects of Christmas? And I'm going to make a sentence out of each one of those words or phrases. So this won't be easy, but start with either the bottom or the top and work your way through. It'll be 1 through 10. The first one is, Christmas is a time to be a peacemaker within my family and the world at large. Second, Christmas is a time to enjoy being with my immediate family. Third, Christmas is a time to create a beautiful home environment. Fourth, Christmas is a time to celebrate the birth of Christ. Fifth, Christmas is a time to exchange gifts with my family and friends. Sixth, Christmas is a time for parties, entertainment, and visits with friends. 7. Christmas is a time to help those who are less fortunate. 8. Christmas is a time to strengthen bonds with my relatives. 8, 9. Christmas is a time to strengthen my church community. And 10, Christmas is a time to take a few days off from work and have a good time. So rank at least the top and the bottom and try to fit the other ones in there. If you want me to read one over again, just ask. Yeah, sure. Get out of the way.
Is one the most important?
One is the most important to you. And this is reflective of what you think is most important, not how you behave. Of things to help you in the process of changing some of the you're celebrating, especially around Christmas. It also looks at, gives some exercises for you to do with people that you're involved with and how men and women look at Christmas celebrations differently. And that also is in the bookstore. I'd be interested in hearing what people came up with or any insights you got from doing this little exercise about your attitudes towards celebrating Christmas in particular. Yeah, Dawn.
I found that some of these have a direct effect on the others because if we didn't have days off, lots of times we can't spend time with our immediate family.
Okay.
So
which comes first, huh?
Yeah. And then also, I found some of them that were more important to me all year round, and not specifically at Christmas.
Okay, great, great. Kit, which ones?
Basically, peacemaker and help others.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And church community.
Okay. Thanks.
I found that, like, it says immediate family. For me, Christmas time, well, now it's becoming more important than immediate family because I'm not with my immediate family all the time anymore. But I know in the past, immediate family was not a concern because I was with my immediate family all the time. And so more concern was toward relatives and friends that I didn't see except at Christmas time.
Life changes, and so the value of how you celebrate changes, yeah. Yeah.
With me, it's still number one is days off because it depends in the winter how many days annual leave you have, and if since weather conditions sometimes aren't appropriate for travel, sometimes you put it off and do everything in the summer.
Okay. Yeah, Marjorie.
For me, in my past life, as I called it when I was married, having the beautiful home and the immediate family probably would have been real close to the top, and now the beautiful home is next to the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's not where my emphasis is anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Same point that Allison was making, that life situations change for us, and another value bubbles up or whatever. Yeah. Any other insights people had? Yeah. What's your name?
Robin.
Robin.
Just sort of adding to some of the others, when you've got little children, you're still teaching them what celebration is or what the holiday is. So a lot of it is sort of a teaching how to make gifts, or that gift giving is important, or teaching that Christmas is a celebration of Christ. So it becomes, you're involved in explaining it all.
Yep.
When they're really little,
important
then once they
point.
Catch on.
Yeah. I think ritual is very important in our lives. And especially for children and young people, so much is unsure in our world. And if we as families and people who relate to younger children can create things that they can be sure of, that helps them with their security in the world and who they are. I have a real strong belief in that. And even though I'm a single person and have no children of my own, I bring children into my life in a variety of ways and try to create rituals with them that are real important, so that, I mean, I can, even though I'm not a parent, get in on creating their beliefs of tradition and traditions. And, yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Gary, is it?
Yeah. I guess I ranked immediate family as the first one.
First one?
One of the reasons is that we have four small children. They're getting a little older now, but they're still just at an age where that's a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we've usually been so busy up to that point that it's just a time to relax and spend time with your family. So I kind of look at this in a little bit selfish way, just mainly because of the point that I am in my life. I think it is a little bit of selfish time, mm-hmm. because that's the most important thing to me right now. And I look at other things like help others and peacemaker, all these worldly sorts mm-hmm. of things. I guess I didn't rank those very high because I feel those are things that can and should be done all year long, and that to just think about those things at Christmas time and then kind of slough them off,
okay.
I guess that wasn't so important.
Yeah. Well, that's important learning. I mean, it's clear what's real important to you right now, and
yeah.
probably will be for a long time. I don't think anybody in this room will say that they were feeling unselfish in this. So you're probably in good company here, I guess. Yeah.
Fine. Robin and I were just sitting here talking about where you're at in life. And days off is the bottom of my list.
Mm-hmm.
She and I were chuckling. We're housewives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
That doesn't exist.
It's not, yeah,
double time.
Right.
Non-existent thing. Days off don't exist.
That's right. Because in a way, it's negative days off. Because to have the beautiful home and to have the gifts and the parties and everything else, that's just added to everything else that you already do.
Mm-hmm.
So
were those things high priorities for you and your
days off?
No, what parties and nice home and
no, they're still on the bottom, but you still got to do them.
Okay. Now the rubber's hitting the road here. You can prioritize, but putting some
doesn't
quality
mean you can eliminate.
Doesn't eliminate. There's a woman I know who does a seminar on Christmas planning, and she uses a lot from this book. And she talks about the process that she and her family have gone through to try to change celebration in their family. And it's a long process. It takes, year after year, you do a few things differently. Your life situation changes, so things change too. But she has a wonderful story where she tells that she grew up in this Norwegian family where they always had, 18 dozen different kinds of cookies, and it took, 2 months to prepare those. And if you weren't a good mom or spouse if you didn't do that. Well, she finally decided that one year was going to be the year that I'm not a good person because I make 18 dozen cookies. That doesn't determine my worth. So she decided that she did value her family and how they felt about Christmas, and that she would then honor each person in her family and ask them, what's your favorite Christmas cookie? I will make that cookie for you. And we'll have five, because there were five members in her family, they'll have five different kinds of cookies and that's it. And probably have a celebration of making them together and that sort of thing. So she thought she had solved this problem. Well, and she went to each person, and I'm not going to remember the exact details, but she went to one family member, and that family member said, I'd like pink cookies. And another one said, well, I'd like ginger snaps. And somebody else, said something like chocolate chip. And she thought, all these years I've been making all these fancy, intricate, difficult to make things, and they want ginger snaps and pink cookies? I mean... So she was imposing her values of having to have all these fancy things on the family, when the family said, no, we'd rather have something we like that tastes good and spend time with you, So she learned a big lesson in that. I think it's a great story. So we just stop and ask one another, what is it, what would make it great for you, And they say ginger snap cookie, and I'm like, oh my. So, but... to talk with one another about how we want to celebrate together. I don't think people do that very often.
Well, it sounds like I'm not Lutheran or Norwegian. It sounds like this lutefisk stuff is something that could just go right out the window. But it's...
It never came in my window. I'm not Norwegian, but I know there are you, Mrs. Anderson, are you Norwegian, is that a part of your tradition?
I'm Swedish background, but.
But you got, have. You have, is that
but
part of your family
enjoy
tradition?
Enjoy it. Well.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the one time a year he could.
Generation probably went more for it. We don't go for it too much.
Yeah.
We'll go once in a while, but it's.
Why is that important to you, Gary?
All it is
tradition,
is hot,
probably more than
tradition.
Cream sauce over.
More memories of being a kid at home and
it's
yeah.
all
Christmas.
And all the agony of trying to find ways not to eat it, and now I got to put my kids through. Things.
Yeah. It's a story. It's a place to get stories, isn't it?
I can tell you a quick story. If you
sure.
One of the former directors of Holden, I think it was right after Carol Hinderly for a year or so.
Fritz Norstedt?
Yeah. He was in, he told this story. He was in Oslo on Christmas Day one day, and he ordered lutefisk. He was in the Grand Hotel in Oslo, and he ordered lutefisk. And he said he waited and waited and waited, and people came and went. Finally, the waiter came, and he said, "We've looked all over Oslo, and we can't find any lutefisk. This is on Christmas Day at the Grand Hotel in Oslo." He said, "Apparently, it was a dish that the peasants ate."
Oh.
In Norway, and that as soon as that was one of the signs in their lives that they had gotten out of that peasant sort of system, and so that was one of the first things they shucked off in their life when they got out of it. But the Norwegians that came to this country tended to keep that on as a remembrance of what their life was.
That's a great story. I'm with you though. I've had one teaspoon of lutefisk in my life, and that'll be plenty.
Well, it's good cod.
Yeah, why do they wreck the good cod?
When our daughter was almost one, her first Christmas, that's all she'd eat for Christmas.
Oh my.
She's grown up since then.
Changed her mind.
We always had the other things like meatballs and rice, all the things. But
yeah. Yeah. They go with it, and it's kind of all a big picture. Yeah.
I know for our family, I'm Swedish. Our Swedish, and we have potatiskorv and rice pudding.
What?
Potatiskorv. It's stuffed sausage with potato, and it's really hard to make. And I think just the idea that it was hard to make and took a long time, you know, I don't know.
Made it special.
But there were, just that idea made it special. And there was just a few people. I'm talking about my extended family. A few people really liked it, and people that didn't like it as well just enjoyed how much the other people enjoyed it so much, because it was just one of those things that you really like or you really don't like. And the same thing with pickled herring and all those other little things, you know. But it's just the idea that some people enjoyed it so much that, and that was enjoyable for us that didn't care and could have cared less about, but it took 5 days to make, and whatever.
I think there's a real sense of gift there. You may remind me of a story in my family. We're not Norwegian or Swedish or anything, and so we don't have any of those kinds of traditions, but every year my mother makes filled raisin cookies for Christmas, because that's my favorite, and I like them, and she hates making them. But, you know, and I know she doesn't like making them because they're putsy, and she doesn't like putsy things. So to me, it's like I go home every year, and I know there's a box of filled raisin cookies. It's Christmas. It's the only time of the year I'll get them, and she made them because she loves. It's an expression of love for me, you know. So that's a part of it all. Is she's saying I love my daughter. I want to make. It's my value at this time of year to express that somehow. So did you want to say something, Frank?
Or, no.
Okay. You're batting a fly or something, huh? Great. I want to talk a little bit. How do we find alternative celebrations? How do we get to them? And because it's hard. Especially, it's easier to think about now in June, and we're thinking about Christmas. You say, well, yeah, I could do this, and we could change that, and we don't have to do that, and we could do this. But when it gets to be November, and things start rolling, and all of a sudden the church says, well, we're having this thing on the first Sunday after Thanksgiving, and then it's all of a sudden you're in the role of it, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm caught again. It's the same thing as last year. So I want to just talk a little bit about how we can make alternative celebrations in our lives. And if you think there are some things that you would like to change in all the kinds of celebrating you do, whether it relates to gift giving or if it relates to the kinds of celebrations you have. But just one, just very first thing is that to realize there's no quick fix to it. It's a year after year change, circumstances change. You try new things, like the woman who just finally one year said, this is the year to try not making so many cookies, to let it be bit by bit, that it's not going to be a big thing all at once. Quite frankly, commercialism runs deep, and it's hard to resist in our culture.
I think there's one thing about the present time, as far as if your relatives are, let's say, Florida, New England, one thing that sometimes dampens the Christmas spirit is having to travel, to fly across the country in the middle of the Thanksgiving or Christmas Day. That, because oftentimes out of Spokane, you know, it gets foggy so you can't get off the ground, and sometimes you end up sleeping in an airport at night. By the time you see your relatives, you're in a pretty grumpy mood.
Makes it real fun, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Even the anticipation of it, that the weather might be bad, is kind of tense sort of thing for some people. I think we can expect our religious community to help us out with these sorts of things. Not only the celebration of Christmas and Advent, but of Thanksgiving, of other celebrations in our lives. I think that we can expect that of our religious communities. What does that mean? That means that we are the religious community, that we need to be involved with that. We need to say, I'd like to try something different. I'd like to be involved with a committee that looks at how we approach this celebration, or the church year, or the liturgical year, or the worship setting that we have, how we celebrate together. So we can expect that there can be some help there, but that we need to pitch in with it as well. We can adapt celebrations that represent what we care about. I think it's, again, it's important to stop and say, well, what are the things I care about? Well, maybe I care more about celebrating Lent and Easter, Holy Week and Easter, than Christmas. Maybe that's the time where I'm going to focus my energy. One of the things I did this year, this past year, was I didn't send any Christmas cards or letters out. I just didn't feel like it, and it was too busy. But then in the midst of it, I realized, I really like hearing from all these people. They probably like hearing from me, too, for the most part. So I decided that one year I sent Epiphany letters that, you know, and everybody thought I was late. But this year, my birthday's on January 24th, so I sent a letter out on January 24th, celebrating my birthday. And I said, you know, it was great hearing from you at Christmas time. I really appreciate that. I just didn't have the energy, and I'm really glad that this is my birthday and it's my day, and here's what I'm thinking about and what's going on in my life. And it was wonderful, because I had the time before and during Christmas, and I took, and in fact what I had done, I had given myself a retreat for my birthday. So part of my retreat time, I wrote this letter, and it was real reflective, and I think it was, you know, informative to folks and interesting.
Well, just another point there is, if you write personal letters too, you can respond to what they said to you,
right?
Rather than having these letters that are crossing,
right?
And you have to wait another year to
see. I luck out, because my birthday's right after Christmas.
Right. That's wonderful.
I always lamented the fact that my birthday was in January, because it was too close to Christmas. Now I've kind of,
you're lucky with all having them just before Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you could send Valentine letters.
No, but my birthday's just before Christmas.
Yeah, but I mean, instead of doing a
well, birthday, Epiphany.
Right, you can do Epiphany.
Which is marvelous.
Right.
And some people don't even know what Epiphany is.
Right. And in effect, really, you're doing an education. Like, what is this? Most people know about the 12 days of Christmas, and you can kind of have them figure that in. But you're right, a lot of people don't know what Epiphany is. I have friends that they've been married about 40 years, and they have all their married life had an Epiphany party. on the 6th of January. And they didn't do big Christmas celebrating with other than outside of their immediate family. And, but they did have a big Epiphany party. And it kind of was a, people then in their circle of friends got to look forward to kind of that was the signal of the end of the Christmas season for them. And, you know, take your Christmas tree down on the same day Chuck and Hertha have the party. It just made me think of something that I lost. I have all these examples. So.
It was also the end of the Christmas chaos period.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they probably enjoyed it much more.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. That's exactly why they did it, because they then enjoyed their friends much more. Oh, I know what I was going to do. Adapting celebrations. Another couple friend of mine, when they got married, the night before their wedding, they instead of having a groom's dinner or that sort of festivity, they had a square dance and invited everybody to the square dance. And everybody had such great fun, and people were saying, boy, you know, we don't get many chances to do this. Wouldn't it be fun if we could figure out how to do this more frequently? So what they did was every year on the celebration of their anniversary, they had a square dance every year. It was the celebration of their life together and the friends that had been at this original celebration, plus the now accumulated new friends. And so after about 4 or 5 years, it got to be quite a big event. And I haven't been to it for a few years now, and I don't know if they still do it, but I thought that was marvelous to kind of, you know, signify a different celebration and do something that people like to do that most people don't have many chances to do. I think it's real important when we're thinking about gifts and in a consumer society like we are in to be creative. And I just wanted to throw out some ideas that I've used and I've read about and I've heard of other people using, and I'd invite you folks to share some of your ideas too. Because I mentioned before that I'm a lot younger than my siblings, I started having nieces and nephews when I was fairly young and didn't have a lot of money for a lot of gifts. So I had to start getting creative about my gift giving when I was a teenager. And what I started doing at that point was my nieces and nephews always got a Christmas ornament from me every year, and I usually made them. And every year I kind of thought up a theme and that was it. And so these kids now who are young adults have a box of ornaments from Aunt Janet that, you know, there aren't the highest quality things, but that's a box of memories for those kids, for those young adults now. This last year,
let me say something.
Sure.
No matter where you are in life, that's a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
Anybody starting out, they don't have Christmas ornaments, or are people who do something that's meaningful. You know, you could even make them religious things. That's a marvelous gift. I love to.
Single people appreciate that gift too a lot.
No matter if you've got a whole box full. Like,
right.
Trunk full.
Right. Yep. coupons. I often will give coupons to people. My nephew was 5 years old when I got a new car once, and so I gave him a coupon for a ride in my new car. No, but what it was time together, or reading stories, or teaching them a craft, or baking cookies together, or the lunch together for just the two of us, nobody else. I'm a great one for coupons. I have all these nieces and nephews, and they mean a lot to me, and I don't get a lot of time to spend with them. So the coupon is a way for me to say time with you is more important than me giving you some sort of gift. This last year, I mentioned that many of these nieces and nephews are young adults now, and they're starting to spread around the country. And I'm finding that I have a hard time keeping up with them and don't know really what's going on, and my siblings don't really write to me very often. So I decided I was going to give to my nieces and nephews the gift of a newsletter. So every 2 months during 1989, my nieces and nephews, and I owe them one now, receive a newsletter from me. And it has in it news of what I'm doing. And some of them have been starting to write to me and say, hey, include this in your next letter. I want everybody to know that, you know, we're going to have a baby, or I just got confirmed, or I read this great book, and people ought to, you know, everybody ought to pick it up. So that's been kind of fun to do that. And I was realistic with myself. You know, my first thought was, I'll write to them every month. And then I thought, no, you won't. So I was realistic, you know, every 2 months, and now I'm kind of about a month late on this last one because I've had a busy time, but I'm committed to getting it done in the next week while I'm here at Holden. So, and you have to have the right, you know, these people are older people now, and so they appreciate that sort of thing. Stamps and cards. I have an aunt who's elderly and doesn't get out of the house very often. She likes to keep in touch with people. She can't get out and buy greeting cards. So every once in a while, I'll go to the store and buy a whole bunch of cards and stick in some stamps, and that's her birthday gift or Christmas gift, that sort of thing. One year, several years ago, I gave my parents a sponsorship to Save the Children, one of these where you sponsor a child. And I put it in their name, but I pay the monthly fee, sort of thing.
I've done that kind of thing with like Sierra Club or Nature Conservancy or those kinds of things too.
Yeah. Memberships, yeah. Smithsonian is another one, that's a good one. Yeah.
Or friends gave us a subscription to The Other Side.
Yeah, and, great. You know, shared a value.
Introduce us to something and then it's up to us to pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, shared something that they said, this is important to us. My sense is it'd probably be important to you. Yeah, that's great. One year I tried this one. It didn't go over so great in my family, but it might in yours. I gave recycled gifts. I had a book I'd read. I wasn't going to read it again. I gave it to my nephew. I had a scarf I wasn't wearing anymore. I gave it to my niece. I had a jacket my mother had made me, and she had made me two. And I decided, I don't need two. I'll give one to my sister because she'll appreciate it because mom made it. That one went over fine. She appreciated it. But some of the other ones, everybody thought I was kind of hokey, that, you know, they thought I was just being a cheapskate. But the value that was coming out there for me was that these are things that I appreciate, but I don't need them anymore. I'd like you to have them. But some people in my family didn't understand it. That's the thing about all this is, you know, you put yourself on the line when you try to do something mm-hmm. alternative. You risk being vulnerable, and sometimes you get accepted and sometimes you don't. Generally in my family, people just don't say anything. You know, it's just kind of, I don't get any feedback. So then I have to ask, and then I find, then they'll, you know, then they'll be feel awkward and all that. But other coupon kinds of things, back rubs, other services that you can do if you write resumes or if you type or if you have a computer in your home and somebody needs something done, those sorts of things. This was a great one. A friend of mine is a pastor, as is her father, and she was a pastor at on a campus, so she had no Christmas Day responsibilities because the campus was closed down. Unlike her father, who had responsibilities for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and then two Sundays on both sides. So her gift to him for Christmas was Christmas Day sermon at his church. You know, very few of us are in that situation, but there might be something that we do that we could give like that. I thought that was a marvelous gift. Plus, she's a good preacher. So, this last year, my family was all together, and it may be one of the last times that all of us are together. Our immediate family with nieces and nephews is about 25 people right now, and I don't think that's going to happen too frequently in the future. So I built a family trivia game that I conjured up in my head stories and remembrances from our family history, and then I made some topics, areas, geography, family history, birthday, important dates, I can't remember all of them, but different categories, and then I slipped the questions in behind each category, and then I created a game board that I had taken pictures and Xeroxed them. I put a lot of work into it. You don't have to be that elaborate, but I made this game board, and everybody got, for Christmas Day, and when they opened their gift, each person got a token. And I'd found these little trinkets around the house that some of them pertained to the person, some didn't. But I said, this is your admittance into the family trivia game, and then I had the game board all set up in the sewing room. And anybody that wanted to play could come that had a token. And that was a big hit. It was a lot of work, but it really did what I wanted it to do. Not, and my selfish part in that was that I went home a couple of days to my parents' house, a couple days early before Christmas, because I decided I don't have time to do this. I'll just do it all when I get home. And I also had the ulterior motive of spending time with my parents preparing the game. So I got them talking about some of these old stories. When was so-and-so, you know, born? When did we get the farm? Do you remember that story about, and my mom and dad and I and my brother walked in, the four of us talked together for about 4 hours one afternoon, pulling together all these stories and different things we could, different questions we could add. That was my Christmas gift, was the time spent with them and conjuring up these old stories. My dad was worried I was going to pull out some of the family skeletons, and I said, don't worry, Dad, you know, I have a few scruples. But another thing, neat thing that happened was one of my nieces got engaged for Christmas. Her fiancé was there, and he pitched in with it, too, and he said, boy, I learned a lot about your family, you know. So it was fun. It was a good, and you don't have to go to, you know, the kind of great lengths that I did with that to kind of accomplish that sort of thing. I read about this one in a book. One family visited their grandparents for Christmas Day and didn't take any gifts. But what they had done is they'd written all these little love notes to the grandparents, and they slipped around the house all over the place. So it was March, and these people were still finding these little notes. You know, I love you, Grandpa, or, you know, thanks for giving me this, or thanks for doing that, you know. And winter gets long for many of us in the Midwest, anyways. And I know it gets long for me. I know that it gets long for my father. And to think that, you know, he might run across, you know, be reading in his Bible and open to this little note in there that somebody slipped in 2 months earlier, you know, is just a day brightener. I thought that was a great idea. My brother, 1 year, took my mom and dad's old 78s, the old records that they couldn't play anymore on their player, and my brother had the capacity to tape them. So he taped all the old records. Another one I've heard about is people videotaping home movies, the old home movies, and putting them on videotape so it's more accessible to people. People generally have more videotape anymore.
Can't you do that with just pictures too?
I think you can.
Yes.
You have to be a little more high-tech than I am, but it's possible. I'm not a very high-tech person. You can tell how high-tech I am when I don't even know how to do that sort of stuff. Anybody have any other gift ideas that you thought of that or have heard about? That?
1 year, was a jar. I decorated the jar, and then inside I just put strips of paper that were made specifically for the person I was giving it to, and there was 365, so there's one for each day.
And, just a thought for them, honey?
Just like a thought for them, and some of them were just like general statements, but most of them were something. I tried to make them like upbeat for if they were feeling down or whatever, so I'd say like, you can handle anything as long as there's a cup of coffee in your hand.
Yeah.
Or I'd say, if the outlook's dark, try the outlook, you know, just things like that. And it takes a lot of work because you have to think of the person specifically of what would be good for them, but it's really helpful. And then I put like little instructions on it, says these can be taken once a day or more if needed. And I said something like...
Prescription.
It was like a prescription. It said stuff like, it won't harm you if you take it while driving, and it won't make you drowsy, and different things like that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And the gift that you gave yourself was spending time concentrating on that person.
About that person and
what they mean to you.
It was just really fun to do. And then I kept, what I did is I typed all these. They have to be kind of short so that you can make it in one line. And I just typed them all out and then ditto copied them and cut them apart. So I have a reference, so I can use some of them for someone.
That's great. That's a
that
great
was
idea.
That's one gift that I did that took a lot of time, but the person really appreciated it. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
definitely.
They could put it back and take it out again.
Right.
She said that when she got it, she just dumped them out and read them.
That's great. That's great. What a fun gift. Yeah, Marjorie.
I like to take pictures during the year.
Good idea.
And then I just kind of hold out the ones that are special and buy a frame and frame it, or maybe in a circle frame or whatever. But people really like to do that too, and it doesn't cost a lot of money.
Just to piggyback on that, my mom and dad celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary 4 years ago, and we kids asked people to write letters in ahead of time, and we put them in a scrapbook. And one cousin just said, I just don't know what to write. I'm not a good writer, but I do have a camera. So to our big celebration, she brought her camera with a roll of film in it, and she took pictures during the celebration, and then the next week we got them in the mail. That was their gift. And I thought that was a really nice gift. So if you're going to a celebration like that, any of us that has the camera could do that.
I've done that at weddings, and I just go and take all these pictures and send it to them.
And they're different than the ones that the fancy photographers take. Yeah, Bonnie.
One thing I have done is I do in-home daycare, and my heart goes out for those parents that can't be with their children while they're growing up. And I have mostly babies, baby through toddlers. And I'll take pictures of the kids throughout the year. And sometimes for the holidays, I give the parents copies of some of these pictures.
Yep.
Times that they couldn't be there for.
Yeah, that's great. That's really important. And those kids are celebrating things that the parents are missing out on, and so the parents can be in on the celebration. Yeah, Dawn.
I love to make cookies, and lots of times I'll give people cookies for their birthday or for all sorts of different celebrations. Mm-hmm. And lots of times I'll make them, I'll shape them into letters and make a message out of them, make cards for Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you get the enjoyment of an activity that you like to do a lot as well. I don't think we need to worry about being selfish in all this. We celebrate and we give to others because it gives us a warmth as well, and to have other people be able to celebrate. Up here, I'm getting late here. Thanks for sharing those ideas. It's always important for me to come up with good new ideas. My family thinks I always come up with these great ideas. And then that means the next year you have to come up with a better one. That's hard. I think it's real important for us to remember to include the lonely and the alone in our celebrating. And maybe we don't always want to include someone, or we don't remember them, but to put that in our planning of our celebrations, is because that will brighten their lives and our lives, because we've done something for someone else. And the biggest thing is to plan and to think, well, what is it I want to happen here? What is it that's my goal? What is really the most important to me? Is it more important to be with the people or to make 18 dozen cookies? What is the most important thing? And then to try to work towards accomplishing that. And one thing I just want to put on here that's really specifically related to Christmas and celebrating Christmas is to let Advent be Advent. And that is very, very difficult in our culture. If you have had the opportunity to be at Holden in December, you know what Advent is, because at Holden, they colonize.
Yes, I have spent quite a few Christmases here.
You have. I've spent some of them with you here.
That's right, too.
Yeah.
Quite a while ago.
Right, a while ago now. But to really use Advent as a time of reflection, for me, I need to stay away from the malls. I need to build in a retreat. I need to plan ahead back in October and November for what I want to do in Advent. And I usually set myself a goal for some things that I want to do during Advent. It always includes a personal retreat, because Advent is a time of reflection and preparation and anticipation. And our culture wants us to celebrate Christmas from about October 31st on. And it's real hard to fight that. But if we can build in some little ways of making Advent ours, even in our home with Advent calendars, an Advent wreath, and our churches doing Advent celebrations together that are craft-oriented or whatever, I think that it will make our lives and celebration of Christmas, especially. More
I want to tell you what we do for Advent in our church, and I started it many years ago. We have an Advent booklet that we all put out. That's a lot of work. It's a lot of work for the person who, you know, you have to keep going. You have to beg people to write.
Is it daily meditations?
Meditations. Mm-hmm. And then you have to see that they write them, and you have to correct them. Then you have to type them, and then you have to
That go. Is, yeah, but that's a wonderful thing.
And everybody looks forward to it.
Yep. And it's a real physical thing you have in your home that reminds you, yeah, this is Advent.
And then so-and-so did it. And then maybe someone passes away and they have written a wonderful one 2 years ago, and you include this.
Yeah, that's great.
Nice.
Our pastor for Christmas sends us one of those little published Advent books, and in it he says, our family will be praying for your family on such and such a date in Advent, so you know that they're praying.
Ooh, that gives me goosebumps. That's nice.
It is nice.
Yeah, Frank, did you want to say something?
I'm just going to comment that I frequently, you know, as far as gifts go or whatever, I'm not necessarily looking for any particular thing or whatever. But I'm constantly looking for kind of different things all year long, so that when Christmas time comes, when Advent comes, I'm not frantically rushing around from store to store with the mobs of people trying to find last minute gifts for everybody.
Get anything, just get something.
Yeah, you know, there's, you know, things like up here at Holden Village, you know, I'll find something in the bookstore or something I think's really neat.
And that makes it more fun for you.
Yeah, Marjorie.
I think about just listening to people during the year when they say things, and my son gave me this trip for my Christmas present. And you know, it only happened because the newsletter came one day from Holden, and I was standing there reading it, and my son stopped in. He doesn't live with me, but he stopped in, and he said, oh, you got a newsletter from Holden? And I said, yeah. I said, they're going to have a singles week this year. He says, well, does that sound fun? And I said, yeah, it kind of does. When is it? He said. And I said, June. And that was the last thing that was said, and that was way last fall. And then at Christmas, he brought her these three great big boxes all wrapped up. And the first box had, he had put little tiny travel size toothbrush, toothpaste, and the second box I opened up was some more all this travel stuff. And the third box I opened up, and there was a Holden Village bath towel with a check for the week's stay here.
And that's great.
Where did you get this towel? That just amazed me. And he said, well, it wasn't easy. He said, I had to come over here and go through all your paperwork for about 2 hours before I found the address. Then I wrote them a letter.
That's a wonderful gift.
And they mailed the towel. But you know, the thing that was so happy about all that to me was that he was listening to me, and he heard something that I wanted.
Yep.
We could all do that all year long. Yep. Not that we can all fill everybody's wishes, but
right. That's great. Yep, and that meant a lot to you that he attended to you in that way. Yep. I had one thing I wanted to close with, but I'm not going to have time to do it. I do want to point out that. Another excellent resource in the area of celebration is a book called Shalom Connections, and in Personal and Congregational Life. This is a wonderful resource that gives you an opportunity to work together with a group of people through a number of lifestyle issues. And in here is a section on celebrations and play.